Ladies and gentlemen, can I please have your attention? And I need all of you to stop what you're doing and listen.
This is Radio Influence. The future is now.
This is Crush Performance. If you have questions, comments, or smart remarks, write to us at crushperformance.com. You're listening to Crush Performance with the Crusher, Jeff Crushell. Get in on the talent grid and follow him on Twitter at Jeff Crush. Now, here he is, the Crusher.
Welcome to Crush Performance. I'm Jeff Crushell, and I'd like to present this Crush must-listen interview as we look at the explosive and controversial topic of match fixing in professional sport. If you haven't heard much about it, it's real, and it might just run deeper and higher than you think. We caught up with Declan Hill, author of The Fix, and his new book, The Insider's Guide to Match Fixing in Football, to discuss his dangerous and alarming investigation into the inner workings of a multi-billion dollar illegal gambling market that reaches well beyond the realms of soccer and all the way down to the lower levels of amateur sport. Here's my conversation with Declan. Enjoy.
And we are joined by Dr. Declan Hill, author of The Fix, and his new book is out, The Insider's Guide to Match Fixing in Football. Declan, thanks for joining the show today.
Hey, Jeff, thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Well, our pleasure, and we've been looking forward to this conversation for quite some time, I will tell you. You know, I read The Fix shortly after it came out originally, and I've got the paperback, of course, and it's a fascinating talk. So I thought maybe we would start it off with your book, The Fix, Soccer and Organized Crime is the title, and finish it off with the new book. But, you know, what really interested me is how this book started in terms of The Fix. You know, you had a little paragraph in there just sort of setting us up, and the last thing you mentioned was the danger factor involved here, and the fact that, you know, you had, you know, all your notes with two different lawyers with instructions that if anything were to happen to you to protect your family, those notes would be released to the public. Let me ask you this to start this off. This seemed like an incredibly dangerous venture.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Look, I mean, the guys that I researched and uncovered don't fool around. These are very, very dangerous people. And as you know from the beginning of The Fix, my passion and my interest began when I was working with the Fifth Estate, the CBC investigative program, on the links between the Russian organized crime and National Hockey League players. And those are strong, corroborated, serious links between very serious mobsters and really prominent hockey players in the National Hockey League. This is back in the late 90s. And I remember a pivotal dinner that we had with a guy who was being named by the FBI and U.S. Congress as, quote, the head of the Russian mob. And you know, we had the interview, and he invited us for dinner at a Georgian restaurant that he owned in the middle of Moscow. And the cameraman and the soundman begged off. They said, look, you know, we don't get paid to do this. You know, we get paid to switch on the equipment and do the interview, but we don't get paid to go for dinner with the head of the Russian mob. And myself and Lyndon McIntyre, the great host of The Fifth, and the other producers said, great, we understand what you're saying, but our perspective is when the head of the Russian mob or the purported head of the Russian mob invites you for dinner, you'd better show up. So we go to this very strange restaurant. Again, as you know, there's a description of this dinner in the middle of Moscow. And in the dinner, I turn to this guy and I say, so I guess you like hockey a lot. Because he was in business and very strong relationship with a guy named Pavel Bure, who I think a lot of our listeners remember. And the guy said, yeah, I like hockey. You know, I follow hockey because of Pavel, but I really love football. And he began telling the story about how he was at the 1994 World Cup final, the final game between Brazil and Italy, and not just in the stadium, the Rose Bowl in Pasadena, but actually in the VVIP box run by the World Soccer Organization called FIFA, but not just in the VVIP box, which is, you know, very, very important people. It's limited to 200 guys. He was in the front row, two along from the then president of FIFA, a guy named Yao Havelange, and three along from the guy who's currently the head of the World Soccer, a guy named Sepp Blatter. And I was sitting there in this Georgian restaurant in the middle of Moscow thinking two things. One, I hope I get out of this place alive. And two, if I do, I really want to figure out what this man was doing at the very epicenter of world soccer. And that was really the kickoff of my investigations.
Wow, and there it begins. We are talking with author Declan Hill about his first book, The Fix. Well, let me Let me put this out there. You know, you mentioned in there that, you know, you would go to your hotel and you'd rearrange the furniture and unscrew the light bulbs so you have an extra 5 seconds in case somebody were to come busting in to take you out. And the book starts like this. The fix starts like this. And I'm sort of quoting here. The story begins with a murder, actually two murders, and they were brutal murders, more in the name of torture, and they were more like statement killings, you mentioned. And I think this really sets the tone for what this book is all about and what this business is all about. Declan, I'm telling you what, this is scary stuff. And, you know, you go on to mention that, you know, match fixing is the ultimate threat to the credibility of sport. And I have to agree with you. Your findings here are alarming to everybody in every sport.
Yeah, they absolutely are. And as you know, Jeff, I was, as a Canadian, I was invited over to Brussels to speak before the European Parliament last week. And my message was very simple. I have seen the destruction of sport. Anyone, any tourist who's been to Asia and has examined Asian sport in the last 5 years will verify this. This is a disaster zone, and that is the future of world sport. It's like a disease, like the Asian flu. Is spreading from Asia. It's now landed on Europe, and it is here in Canada in a very small degree, but it will grow more serious. The key to understanding this for any of our listeners, and I really want people to, you know, this is the take-home message from our conversation today, is that globalization, the same thing that's hit the music industry, the travel industry, all kinds of industries, has hit in a weird way the sports corruption industry. So 10 years ago, it wasn't worth an Asian match fixer or some Russian guy or Italian mobster or whatever to fix a soccer game or a hockey game over here in Canada. Now it is. Now the liquidity on these small games in these small leagues all the way up to the big games is so massive that it's worth these guys traveling around the world, setting up networks, setting up fixes, and really destroying the credibility of sport around the world.
Well, we're talking with author Declan Hill regarding his book, The Fix. His new book is out, The Insider's Guide to Match Fixing in Football. Declan, let me back up here a second. I really want to get your, now that you've been through this and you understand the lay of the land better than anybody on the planet, let me ask you this. Going back to your original scenario that got you thinking, how does the head of the Russian mafia get to the, not just a, but the VIP booth at a World Cup event, and what are the influences there?
Yeah, I think, I want to make something very clear. The head of world soccer is a guy named Sepp Blatter. For those of you guys who don't know too much about the structure of the organization of soccer, I'm not trying to be, funny in any way. It's a bit like being the Pope of soccer. And, sure. And this is the Vatican in the middle of Switzerland. He runs this thing a little like a cross between the International Olympic Committee and the Vatican. And he's an immensely controversial guy. But I don't think he and the guys around him are fixing matches. That's not what I think is going around. But I think the risk is the national head of soccer associations around the world. And this was the entrance for this particular Russian guy. He was a very good friend of the then head of the Russian Soccer Association. It's those guys, it's the guys that vote for the, quote, Pope of world soccer, who are the problems. Not every single one of those guys is match fixing. But there's a significant minority of them who are involved in this kind of activity. And that's the real risk. That's the real problem of defending the world's most popular sport.
We're talking with Declan Hill, author of the book, The Fix, Soccer and Organized Crime. Well, let me get this off the table right now because we are in Hockey Central here in Edmonton. Your investigation into the Russian mafia and hockey. Is it safe to assume that we are naive to think that this isn't happening at the higher levels of the hockey game?
Look, what we're going to speak about is potential fixes at the World Cup, certainly fixes during the Champions League, certain fixes during almost every single level of soccer. So I don't want to speculate about a sport that I don't know anything about.
Perfect.
I really want to hold on to my credibility on this issue. I would say that back in the 1990s, when we at the Fifth Estate worked and did this documentary, the links between organized crime mobsters in Russia and key players in the National Hockey League were absolutely robust and corroborated in all kinds of legally robust ways. There was no doubt, for example, the man that the U.S. Congress had said, hey, this guy is head of Russian organized crime, was a business partner with Pavel Bure, the star for a number of years with Florida Panthers and Vancouver Canucks. There was no doubt that Slava Fetisov, the Detroit Red Wings defenseman, winner of a Stanley Cup, was named in court documents as being head of the organization that the FBI named as the main money laundering vehicle for the guy who was head of the Russian mob in the United States, a guy named Vyacheslav Ivankov. There are lots of innocent reasons why Fetisov's name might have been on those court documents. You know, he may not have known about them. He may have been forced to sign them. You know, they could be innocent reasons. But those links were absolutely corroborated, as was a number of others.
Okay, well, let's leave it at that. It is sexy to be around those, you know, those big stars, right? And hockey's as important in Russia as it is here, so you can kind of get the draw for certain. So we'll leave it at that. But okay, moving back to soccer then, here I get the draw. Like, if you look at what you're talking about, organized crime and the illegal gambling ring that you stumbled across, it is massive. The American Journal of Foreign Policy estimated, quote from your book, that the Asian gambling industry, legal and illegal, is tipping the scales around $450 billion a year. That is a big, big number. Wow.
Yeah, actually, the numbers get even larger than that. Interpol, the International Police Agency, now estimates it at somewhere around $500 billion. And a very senior executive of an organization called the Hong Kong Jockey Club, which is one of the world's biggest gambling organizations. It's a legal gambling organization based on the racehorse at Happy Valley in Hong Kong. But they have a sports trading desk there, and he estimates the Asian sports gambling at somewhere around $1
trillion. Wow. So you can see the draw there. There's money to be made here, and they're making it. So let me ask you this, Declan.
Yes, sir.
You were around these guys. You talked to them. They actually shared with you how this breaks down. How do they do it? How do they get in and actually fix a match?
Well, this is the new form of corruption. So all our listeners know that corruption in sport has been around since, the ancient Olympics, before Christ, 2,500 years ago. So, the fact that people can fix and corrupt sports events is not new. The new thing that has been added on is that the gambling on this mass market and the globalization of the fix. So what you get is, you get, instead of one fixer fixing the game, you get two fixers. One is the local guy, be it in El Salvador, South Africa, Zimbabwe, Canada, Italy, Greece, Turkey, wherever. And then he's got a partner over in Singapore, Malaysia, Thailand, Indonesia, wherever, who fixes the global gambling market. So it's like these two criminals marry each other or come to terms with a business deal and are fixing these, huge market, but also bribing the referees, the players, and or the club owners.
So how do they get access to these guys? So, in your book, you talk about an instance where a referee is approached and he is unwilling to do it. And the mafia guys go, well, hey, listen, we know where your sister goes to school. We know where your granny shops. That's scary stuff.
Yeah, it is. But, one of the things in the new book that I talk about is the statistics that I did. My publisher calls it Freakonomics meets soccer corruption. So I actually broke it down into stats, and I looked at the level of violence, whether violence is used as a recruitment method for referees and players, and found that in most cases it's not. Most of the time the mob uses that kind of violence and that kind of threats when the business deal, quote, match fixing, in other words, goes wrong.
Okay.
So that the referee or the player changes his mind, and then they're like, okay, well, if you don't do what you agreed to do, there's going to be consequences. In some ways, it's like the legal system of the corrupt world. Most of the time, they're approaching the guys and they're making just strict business deals. And how they go about doing that, as you know from the second book, I spend a lot of time explaining how they do it, how they put them together, and what they do. There is one final thing that I want to emphasize about this particular question. What we're seeing in some countries now in Europe, some, not all of them, is a system of corruption that's so endemic it becomes their business model. So what do I mean by that? I mean that there are some clubs, European clubs and teams, that sit down at the beginning of the season. They say, okay, we're going to play 40 games in total this season. We're going to try to win these 20 to 30, and we're going to deliberately lose these 8 to 10. But because we know we're going to lose these 8 to 10 for certain, we're going to bet against ourselves on the gambling market, and we'll make more money losing those 10 games than we will for the rest of our season.
We'll be right back with more of our conversation with Declan Hill as we look at match fixing in professional sport right after this on Crush Performance. Once you commit yourself to the world of sport performance, it doesn't turn off. It's always coming at you, and you have to be ready to respond. That's sport performance. But how do you put it all together to get the results you need? Now you can learn how as Crush Performance presents the Sport Matrix, a program designed to help athletes navigate the world of sport performance and athlete development to find out what it really takes to achieve human maximum performance. The Sport Matrix. For more information, go to crushperformance.com.
Find out what it takes to be a top performer. Get the Crush blog, podcast, and newsletter at crushperformance.com. Now, back to the show.
We're talking with Declan Hill, author of The Fix, Soccer and Organized Crime. His first book, which we're addressing right now, his new book is out. It's The Insider's Guide to Match Fixing in Football, which goes very, very deep into how this whole organization is run, and it's a big one for sure. One other thing I just want to get to from The Fix before we move on to your new book. I kind of thought it very interesting when you talked about the organization and how they treat it as a business. You mentioned something that kind of caught me off guard, and that was the idea of the trust factor. There has to be a trust factor on all sides, and I thought that was an interesting way to sort of describe what you were talking about, and that is sort of the enforcement side of the betting world.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, look, if you want to get into an informal network which has huge levels of trust, just go into the informal gambling market. You can pick up a phone in Edmonton. You can talk to an informal, i.e. an organized crime bookie. You can have two sentences with them, and they will, if they owe you money, they'll be there and they'll pay it off. You know, I mean, just the levels of trust on those gangster things. The reason is because in the long run, the bookies always win.
Right.
But in terms of payment in illegal gambling networks, it's very, very high. The reputation is extraordinarily high.
And the reputation also works the other way. You know there will be retribution if you don't hold up your end of the game as a bettor. And that's another sort of trust level that you mentioned. Oh. And that's not the good side.
No, totally. You trust them to come and break your legs if you don't pay your debts.
Right.
And so you have that, as you say, it's a very ironic, weird sense, but you can trust a mobster to pay his debts if he's the bookie, and you can also trust him to come around and break your legs if you're not paying up as well. So it functions very, very well, and it's a huge, huge lucrative source of income for organized crime here in North America. It rivals, according to some of my sources, their income that they have from drug trade. So it's a massive source of revenue for these guys.
Yeah, we're talking with Declan Hill, author of The Fix and The Insider's Guide to Match Fixing in Football. A couple more things. You know, for our listeners who maybe don't understand exactly how this betting world works, you know, we're talking $500 billion, between illegal and illegal gambling. They're not just betting on wins and losses here. They're betting on absolutely everything and pretty much every sport you can imagine.
Yeah, and you know, we've concentrated most of our conversation for obvious reasons on the international game of soccer.
Yes.
But the sport with, hypothetically, the greatest problem of fixing is, of course, and, I'll put this out for a five-second challenge to our listeners. What is the easiest sport in the world to fix? I'll give you 5 seconds. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Of course, the people who've guessed tennis are right.
Right.
Tennis is fantastically easy to fix because, say I'm fixing a boxing match and, one guy's got to take a dive. He's still got to take a punch before he can, dive.
Right.
In tennis, we can be playing back and forth and then suddenly I clutch my hamstrings in the middle of the second set and say, hey, I can't go on. Bingo, fix is accomplished. So ATP tennis admits that they have a problem. They put into place an integrity officer. They put into place an education campaign that players have to, you know, take every year. They are very aggressive about banning mobile phones and communication devices around certain of their key tournaments. But that is really a major, major problem for ATP tennis, is this fixing.
We're talking with Declan Hill, author of The Fix, and his new book, The Insider's Guide to Match Fixing in Football. The website is DeclanHill.com. Well, you know what? It would be interesting. You know, think about the soccer players, for example. It is tough. I mean, to actually make a good fix, I would imagine. How do you make it look good? I mean, these guys got to have problems that way. And you mentioned that it's not so much what they do as much as it is what they don't do. And I thought that was an interesting perspective.
Yes. You know, I had thought when I began this research, you know, particularly the statistical research, that it was a question of giving away a penalty or, you know, scoring an own goal or something like that. And there's no doubt that they do that, but they'll do that when they're desperate. What they'll try to do is not do what they're supposed to do. So they won't make, you know, to use a hockey term, they won't follow through on the check. You know, they'll just kind of miss the guy. And they'll let him get past them so he can get his shot away rather than bring him down and give away a penalty, which will be the source of much discussion and controversy, and people will be watching it and stuff. So they try to underperform the fix. They try not to do what they should be doing. At the same time, they're acting frantically. You know, they're making these big acts like, oh, you know, I'm so sorry that, you know, this happened. I couldn't do it. You know, I talked to a guy that played for Serie A, the top league in Italy, you know, at some of these top teams, and he told me privately, look, I hate fixing. You know why? I'm a soccer player. I'm not an actor. And when I have to, you know, when I have to do these fixes, all I'm doing is acting. So that's what they're pulling off. They're doing this underperformance. Meanwhile, you know, they're acting up a storm as if they could win the Oscars.
Yeah, great stuff. Well, interesting. You know, let's talk about the new book, because it is as fascinating as The Fix. And I'm not going to lie to you, since I've read The Fix, I watch sports with a different viewpoint. You know, when one of the big athletes makes a play or misses a play that they should normally, I'm suspicious now, man. Curse you for all of this.
Hey, brother, I love sports. I think that we can actually win this battle against this wave of corruption. As you know, I risked my life to defend sports that I love.
Right.
And I'm really have gone on the wire for the last 3-4 years since The Fix came out, testifying, speaking, lobbying, trying to get people aware that this is going on. Because again, as you know from the end of the second book, I'm proposing a whole bunch of solutions, many of which don't cost all that much money. You know, you can get a half-decent anti-fixing program put into place for $100. By the way, I do want to single out a soccer team in Edmonton, the NASL soccer franchise there. They're leading the way across this country of ours in terms of putting into place an integrity program for their team. And I think they really should be congratulated. I think you've got a national leader there in Edmonton on this issue.
Yeah, and that is great. That's commendable. We've talked to those folks. They know you're on the show tonight for certain. You know, Declan, we often talk about solving problems for our athletes or, you know, our business people that we work with. And one thing that we do know is if you don't accurately define the problem, it's a really, really tough fix. And I think what's happened in this second book here is you clearly define the issues, the problems, and beautifully you come up with some solutions that give sports fans everywhere hope.
Yes. Yeah, and look, I think a lot of this is really basic. Like, it's real simple stuff. And so what I'm now going to say, again, for sports fans that aren't particularly interested in soccer, you're just going to be astounded at some of the stuff I say. So please, anything that I'm saying now or in the rest of the interview that you don't, please just go check this on the internet and you'll see that I'm not making this stuff up.
Right.
But soccer players in general in Europe are really badly exploited, and many times they don't get paid. So it's not unusual, for example, in a prominent league like the Spanish league, in the top division of Spain, for teams that would play, you know, some of the top teams in the world, like Barcelona and Real Madrid, not to receive their salaries for 6 months to a year. Now, you know, you don't have to be a brain surgeon to figure out that's an open door to corruption. If you don't treat your professional athletes as professionals, i.e. pay them what you promised to pay them, of course they're going to be open to corruption. And so this is one of the first things that I say when I'm consulting for European leagues or when I'm speaking over in Europe. I say, look, You want to protect your leagues? Just make the teams, make the clubs put into trust accounts before the season starts the player's salary. And then they have automatic withdrawals, goes direct into the player's accounts. And just doing that, just having that very basic organizational, professional organization can eliminate 60 to 70% of the fixing. Because, you know, if you pay most of these athletes, they don't want to fix. They don't like fixing. They're competitive people. And they just want to get some money and keep their families together. That's what we're dealing with.
Right. And, you know, that does make sense. We're talking with Declan Hill, author of The Fix, Soccer and Organized Crime, and his new book right now, The Insider's Guide to Match Fixing in Football. It came out early in November. And, you know, that's a fascinating perspective, because you got to think that that has to get under control if they're going to curb the fixing problem. And, yeah, that's understandable for players who aren't getting paid when there's somebody making millions and millions of dollars off their efforts.
Yeah, it's not only that. I mean, there's something, again, if people want to see some of my sources and some substantiation, there's an organization called FIFPro, which is the umbrella organization of soccer players around the world. They came out with something, quote, the Black Book of Soccer Conditions, back in January 2012. It's downloadable for free. And it's about 150, 200 pages of a survey and interviews they did with over 3,000 soccer players in Europe. And the stories coming out of there are shocking. You know, you and I are speaking about organized crime, mobsters, thugs, guys from Asia, wherever, coming right into the game. These guys are like the team owners, and they're threatening these guys.
Wow.
So you know, the problems are just extraordinary. And for a North American sports fan, it's like, hey, you know, this is amazing. This is extraordinary. And my warning to North Americans, you know, it may seem unbelievable, may seem like a very distant thing, but when I started talking about this in 2005 in Europe, I said, look, I've seen Asia. I've seen the destruction of sport in Asia. There are very few Asian sports now that have any credibility, and Asian sports fans and Asian bettors are now turning to your sports. Europeans just didn't believe me. You know, who is this Canadian coming in and telling them about their sport on their continent? Well, boy, don't they wish they'd listened to this guy, because, you know, they've had fixing scandals in Finland, Sweden, Norway, Slovakia, Slovenia, Poland, Czech Republic, Germany, Austria, Switzerland, Italy, Turkey, Greece. You know, I could go on and stuff. Basically, 47 of the 53 countries that make up the European Soccer Union have had these police investigations into fixing. Once that market goes, once the credibility of most European soccer disappears, invariably the gambling market will start to turn to North America. We already have major problems with a league called the Canadian Soccer League, which is third-tier soccer here in Canada. We've had convictions of match-fixing in that league, but, you know, I mean, every week I get stuff from Asian bookmakers about the alleged fixes that are going on there, so much so that there's no credibility there in that league now, and I don't understand why Canadian authorities put up with it. So it will come to the sports that we love. It will come to hockey. Won't happen overnight. It won't be like, you know, in the next, you know, a few years, but from 3 to 5 years, we can expect to see this problem on our shores unless we start to do something about it right now.
Right. Okay, well, two last questions for you, Declan. We really appreciate the time today. Number one, hey, how far-reaching is it? You just explained and you answered part of my question already, but, you know, you talk about reaching into North America. We talk about the travesty in Europe and European soccer. How far does it go? We're talking about World Cup matches, right down to what, amateur leagues under 14, you mentioned in the fix. Wow.
No, sorry. I just want to be certain. Under 17 games have been fixed.
Under 17.
We're talking about 16-year-olds. And again, to explain that to our listeners, I was in Manila in September when the super typhoon was hitting the shores of Eastern Asia, and the only game that was still being played on that Friday night when I was sitting with the bookies as they were going through the thing was an under 16 game between Hong Kong and Macau. And, you know, in no way was that game fixed. However, just in one book alone, just, you know, I'm just literally sitting in one bookmaker alone, there was $4 million on these 15-year-olds playing that game. Now, in no way do I want to suggest those kids were fixing, but I'm saying $4 million on 15-year-olds, you begin to understand the depth of the problem. European police, Europol, have said that over 150 international matches in the last 3 years were fixed. That's national team games. You know, that's right to the top of the world in terms of international soccer. It is a massive problem for the world's game.
Okay, last question, Declan. Can an honest sports administrator prevent match fixing? How do we look at this point in time?
Yes. Look, you know, as you know, the last two chapters of the book, you know, the latest one, The Insider's Guide, specifically talk about that. There's
yes.
a whole bunch of things that they can do. Set up anonymous hotlines. You know, make it easy for players to be honest. Give them a possibility so they can report corruption easily, anonymously. You know, set it up effectively. Set it up separately. What does that cost? $100, an answering machine, an independent phone line? Bingo. Set up. Two, make sure the players get paid and the referees are paid properly and adequately. It goes straight into their bank accounts. They're not having to, you know, beg for money to keep their families in food and stuff. That's pretty easy as well. Three, make sure every single game is as competitive as it possibly can be. Just make sure the season is well engineered and well organized so that you don't have a lot of, you know, nonsense games, which is the problem in a lot of the European games and, frankly, a lot of North American games. Once teams realize that they're not hitting the playoffs, a lot of their games become meaningless because
right.
there's nothing for them to play for. So a league administrator can just sit and go, you know, I want that point in the season delayed as long as I possibly can. Anyway, I don't want to take too much of your time, but there's literally chapter and chapter and chapter of this in this second book as to how honest sports officials can help beat the game, beat this threat to the game. And I think we can win. Sport is under attack now, but I really do think that we can win this war if we take it seriously.
Well, and your efforts has helped us all move in the right direction. It's Declan Hill, author of The Fix, A Soccer and Organized Crime, and his new book, The Insider's Guide to Match Fixing in Football. Must reads for any sports fan out there. Declan Hill, we thank you for all of your efforts, enduring the dangers and getting this information out to the world to make sport a better place.
Jeff, thank you so much for having me on. I deeply appreciate this.
Our pleasure.
Crush Performance, your weekly source for sport performance and athletic development information. If you're a serious athlete, a weekend warrior, parent, or coach, join us each week as we investigate the latest trends and research coming out of the sport performance world. We'll visit with top athletes, coaches, and sports scientists to keep you on the cutting edge and to find out what it truly takes to achieve human maximum performance. You can visit us online at crushperformance.com, and Crush Performance Radio with me, Jeff Kershaw, can be found on iTunes, Stitcher, and at Radio Influence.